what you're doing when you're reading aloud to a kid is you are engaging in their imagination by speaking a world into existence. And you're speaking a world into existence that your children are going to inhabit. And you're going to inhabit that world with them. And you're going to experience things with them along the way, along this journey through this story.
The Commonplace is a podcast for the new homeschooling mom delighted by the ideals and principles of a classical Charlotte Mason education, but who feels unsure of how to get started on the practical side of nourishing a soul on the good, the true, and the beautiful. I hope you find camaraderie here as we get our bearings in the world of old ideas and old books, of wisdom and virtue, and of the means of grace by which God works in this world through the commonplaces, which includes your home. So, if you're like me, trying to offer your children an education unlike your own, and wondering if you can create an atmosphere, a discipline, and a life of such richness, I'm here to tell you, I think you can. I'm your host, Autumn Kern, and I'm pleased to welcome you to The Commonplace. Hello and welcome back to the Commonplace podcast. My name is Autumn and we are continuing on our very special season 4, all about story and all with very special guests. And today I am joined by Shay and Catherine Gregory of Wolfbane Books. Will you guys say hello to the Commonplace?
Hey guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having us, Autumn.
Oh, of course. I am thrilled about this. My kids are thrilled about this. We really love Wolfbane. And I was trying to think about how I first came across Wolfbane Books. And I remember that I had actually a number of Commonplace listeners sending me little messages like, hey, I think you would like these guys. You need to check out Wolfbane. And admittedly, people are kind to think of me when they find cool things. And so I don't always remember to chase down every little thing that they sent my way. But one day I was walking around and I thought, Wolfbane, like, Peter Wolfsbane, and I just knew it had to be a Narnia thing. So I went running to my computer, pulled up your website, and loved everything. You were talking about a king and the need of an imagination for courage, and of course, a lot of Narnia. So having you guys here is such a treat for me, but not everyone maybe knows you. So if you could start by telling us a little bit about your family and how you each came through the classical wardrobe.
Oh, well, thanks for your kind words about Wolfbane. You know, Narnia resonates with so many people. So it's always fun to meet like minds. But so I'm Shay. Catherine and I have been married for almost 16 years now. So what vocationally, I run some family businesses. I'm an ordained Anglican priest. So I get to preach some and do some of those kind of things, but I'm not on a church staff. Catherine, you want to talk about what you do?
Sure. I have been a homeschool mom for, this is my 10th year. We have 9 kids, ages 14 to 10 months. So I stay home and manage the kids and homeschool them, which is a very tough job these days.
I imagine so.
So both of us went to Well, I went to Catholic school growing up. We were not a Catholic family, but it was a good school, great experience. And Catherine went to public schools, right?
Public and private,
yeah,
but never homeschooled.
Mixture of the two.
Yeah.
And so our oldest is now almost 15. And when we first started having kids, I guess our first entrance was learning about homeschooling and its sort of growing following and participation in, because there weren't any homeschoolers when we were growing up, you know, hardly any. And we were at a small church plant that had a few homeschooling families in it. And we met them, we saw the fruit of that sort of education, and we were kind of drawn to it. And at some point early on, I think before we had kids, Catherine actually taught at the co-op that we are now a part of, right?
Yes, I was the first kindergarten teacher there. But I did not want to homeschool at that point.
Really?
Yeah. So when we were at the church plant, a lot of my friends that were living in town, they left. And I was left by myself without any girlfriends and pregnant with our second child. And I pray that the Lord would provide friends. And he provides one of my good friends still to this day. Her name is Ashley. And she's like 10 years older than I am, homeschool mom. And she introduced me to two other people. They were also homeschool moms. And I was like, Lord, these people are like older than me and they homeschool. Like, what's happening? And they ended up being my best friends still to this day. And then Shay convinced me to homeschool later. He said, well, you have a master's in education. And we don't want to put our kids in regular school. So let's try this out.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think a lot of people can, a lot of the women who listen to Commonplace can resonate with what you said, Catherine, about feeling like, oh, is this what I'm going to be doing? A lot of women that I talked to were not planning on homeschooling. And so the Lord kind of brought them into it from a variety of ways. But I think that initial jump is something that many will understand. Now, I mentioned that I fell in love with the Wolfbane website immediately. I did not mention that I immediately purchased a book. I bought The Forgotten King, which I will have links to these things in the episode notes today so that you can also find them for your family. But the book was beautiful. The story was beautiful. The language was beautiful and poetic. But the actual aesthetics of the book, they're beautiful. It's actually beautifully bound. And so I had the chance to talk to Shay a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned this. And he pointed to lovely books behind him and said that when they were creating it, he wanted to make sure that The Forgotten King would be beautiful enough to sit amongst his heirloom books. And I loved that. I love when people put an emphasis on beauty, but not often do I hear people putting an emphasis on beauty when it comes to things for kids, books for kids. I often think that kids get the short end of the stick. They get the ugly cartoonish characters, they get the offensive colors, or they even get the broken bits from around the house put in their rooms. Little things they can use. Even Charlotte Mason talks about this, not giving kids the stained tablecloths and the broken chairs. But it's often what happens to kids. And so I would love to hear from you guys why it's important for children to have beautiful stories, but also in beautiful forms.
Yeah. So it's a big topic. And it's an interesting topic. We were recently, actually this past weekend, we were on a panel at a conference about heirloom books and the resurgence of heirloom books. So this is fresh on my brain, but I think simply put is, you know, God loves beautiful things, so we should make beautiful things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the very base level. And our kids are learning and growing in their affections and for how they are coming to know what is beautiful. And so giving them stories that are held in these beautiful casings is important. And there's definitely crossover with theology here. You know, our theology informs everything we do, right? So it, you know, if you think about Romans 1 in the way God has so clothed the world as to make his great love known, you know, the gospel is known, you know, sort of the natural revelation. The world tells a story. It tells us about who God is and his character. So if you sort of transfer that upon the things we create, the stories we tell, you know, why, if we want to put forth a beautiful story, why not clothe it in a beautiful book? So I think it's okay to judge a book by its cover. You know, we should at least be aiming to match content with form so that we are communicating honestly about what's in it. And because if it's something beautiful and good and true in the story, we want to draw kids into it. You know, we want to draw the reader into it. And I say all this, and at the same time, it's not always possible to spend the money to make something beautiful and lasting. Sometimes you just got to get it out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And some things are meant to be in paperback form, like a workbook, you know, or a board book, you know, those sorts of things. They can still be beautiful, but they might not be cloth bound, you know, with gold embossing. So there's a range there. Those are my initial thoughts.
No, that's lovely. I love the idea of the being honest and how you present it fully so that you draw a child in. We often talk about over here truth, beauty, and goodness, the transcendentals, and how this is what all persons need. But I think it's really easy to overemphasize one of these things. And if you look throughout history, we people have been able to overemphasize one in all times and all places. And I think recently for the Christian world, we're coming out of a time where truth was emphasized without the necessary goodness and beauty. And of course, that has effects. And one of those, I think, is that for a while, the imagination was not necessarily cared for, because it needs beauty and it needs goodness in order to flourish. So can you guys tell us a little bit about why the imagination is so important to Christian formation and how story plays a part in that as we seek to cultivate these things in our children?
Yeah, that's such a big question, Autumn.
I know, just going to throw that at you guys.
Yeah, I know, right? So I will start with, So this podcast is about story. So maybe we just start with the importance of story and sharing stories. And I think that'll lead us to imagination. So if, you know, in the context of reading aloud in a house, which we do, and all your listeners probably do, if you think about what you're doing when you're doing that, say particularly a father, I'm a dad. What you're doing when you're reading aloud to a kid is you are engaging in their imagination by speaking a world into existence. Mm-hmm. And you're speaking a world into existence that your children are going to inhabit. And you're going to inhabit that world with them. And you're going to experience things with them along the way, along this journey through this story. And so you're all engaged in your imagination in this world that's been spoken into existence. So you're mimicking God in that way, right? And mm-hmm. and your kids are being formed. Their affections are being learned and formed. And not only that, like as you do that over and over again, it's like, you know, by the time your kids are sort of getting a little more independent, preteens, teenagers, and they're starting to do things on their own, And they're running into things in the world where they need your help and assistance, hard things maybe. You know, you've already walked through 1,000 wardrobes with them and you've experienced these types of things along the way, but maybe in a different way, you know, in the imagination, but you've still engaged these things. So these stories inform us how to operate in God's world. And it first happens in our imagination. If you think about the way Jesus taught, you know, that is the way Jesus taught. Like somebody would ask him a question, he would tell a story. Right. He'd say, hey, enter this world real quick and tell a story about two sons or whatever the story was, you know, these parables. And so I think the way Jesus teaches should inform the way we teach and catechize and all those things.
Yes, I think it's very powerful to be able to have what could be described as like imaginative pathways of ways to act in the world. Yeah, one thing that we talk about a lot is that virtue isn't virtue if it only stays in your head, or even if it only stays in your heart. You actually have to embody and move in God's world. And how can we show our children what that looks like in a variety of ways without them ever having to maybe live through each of those experiences? That's such a powerful thing about stories that you can enter into so many times and places. I think that when we think about cultivating the imagination, there can be a lot of questions about, will kids be confused? Will this maybe hinder their understanding of God if I introduce this magical fairy world? How do you guys respond to parents if, you know, either of you are just at church, maybe Catherine, you're talking to your homeschool moms and that comes up, how do you enter that kind of conversation?
I don't think that you should limit their imaginations. And I think that you do have to be careful about what books you give them. But at the same time, you are there walking with them in this story. So you're able to answer the questions. You're able to decipher truth and goodness versus maybe what's depicted as evil in the story. Like they will come across evil in this world. That's very obvious. So if they're able to learn how to combat it and deal with it before they even have to really be faced with it is a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think maybe you're referring to things like you run into parents who say no to Harry Potter, stuff like that. just to name one specific one. Yeah. And there's lots more out there. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that Chesterton quote comes up a lot on this podcast of the dragon. Yeah. Yeah. The, <St. George>. That fairy tales exist, not to show kids that dragons exist, but that they can be slayed. That's right. Total paraphrase. But, you know, you can draw so much redemptive goodness out of so many stories. There are trash stories out there too. And if you experience a trash story with your child, that's probably an okay thing, because you can kind of process that with them and point out why it's garbage, you know? Right.
We have very avid readers, especially our older ones. So we cannot pre-read everything that they read. So we have come across that situation, and it's been fine, because we're able to show, you know, they'll come to us and say, this probably wasn't something I should read, or, you know, I read this, what do you think about this? So we're able to talk with them about it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really encouraging to hear. You both pulled on a thread that we inhabit the world of the stories that we read with our families. I think for moms who are just coming in through the classical wardrobe, they're just starting to homeschool. They're very much in the season where we look at all the book lists and we read everything for the do's and the don'ts. And we're still feeling pretty pragmatic about it. Like, just tell me practically what needs to be done so I can do this well. And what I'm hearing is that actually this is a whole way of life together. And so when it's built on relationship, which ultimately we know the classical tradition is built around relational things. Like, do we love the right things the right way at the right time? Are we reordering our affections? It's really much larger than just put in A, get B. It's not a machine thing. It's a symphony thing, right? It's a festival thing.
Yeah.
And so once you start to hear these bits from parents who are a little bit ahead, that actually we have this culture together in our family where we love stories, and we've been walking with our kids since they were little in the world of stories. So now we don't worry about pre-reading every single book that comes into the house, because we've actually built out this relational part where we can discuss stories really easily. Story is a world we're comfortable in. And I'm hearing both of you kind of bring that up, which leads me to something else I wanted to ask you about. So I know you guys are familiar with Mason. The commonplace audience definitely is. And we know that in our instruments of education, we have three. One is ideas, and known as life. And we already have pretty well defended that you need really good ideas for your kids and stories. But the other two are atmosphere and discipline, or habits, for anyone who's new to Mason speak. And so I have kind of a two-part question. One is, how can we create an atmosphere of loving good stories in our home? And because we know our atmosphere is made up of our habits, what habits do we need to cultivate to enjoy family read-alouds? And if you guys want to split those up or just bounce back and forth, any offer of encouragement for us, we would be grateful to hear.
Yeah, I think I'll start by saying that it's not always the case that everybody's always wanting to read aloud all the time. You know, you'll say, oh, okay, guys, let's go read Narnia. And you might get a grumbler or two, you know,
or three,
or maybe one starts to grumble. And then it's like just a trickle down from there. And everybody just catches. It's contagious.
Yeah.
So it's not always like this perfect scenario, but so you do have to cultivate it, which is what you're saying. You have to cultivate it. You have to be disciplined about it, but you don't want to force your kids into reading aloud at the same time, making it some painful process. So, a very practical level, we will incorporate desserts,
snacks,
you know, snacks, sweets, that sort of thing. But before you get there though, I think maybe part of what you're asking about is, just the culture in the home. And so like when they see mom reading, when they see dad reading, you know, at regular times during the day, like in the morning reading the Bible or whatever, it communicates something that they aren't even picking up on, you know, that reading is a value, that the Bible is a value, that God's word is a value. They'll see me reading fiction in the evenings or afternoon, and they'll pick up on that, and they'll go grab a book, that sort of a thing. Catherine, you have something to say?
Kids will do what you do more than what you say to do. Mm,
that's really good.
We have definitely seen that in our home. And Shay is the priest, is more theological. I'm the mom, is more practical. So, and I know, and when I'm listening to a podcast, I want to know what to do. Right. How do I get my kids to sit and listen? Now, when I read aloud. We have so many kids, so I'll usually take the bottom ones, and Shay will usually read to the top ones. Yeah. We kind of divide and conquer at different times of the day. So when I have the little ones.
So like bottom four and top five. Top five being the favorite five, not the age.
Yes. This is a ranking, you know, where you sit.
Yeah. Total joke. Total joke.
Shay will bust out the ice cream, and I have the babies and the toddler, and so I have to be a little bit more strategic. Mm-hmm. So I give my kids 5 minutes. I said, I'm reading aloud in 5 minutes. You need to do everything you need to do. Make your fort, get your coloring pad, go to the bathroom, get your snack, because once I read, you're not getting up, you know? So, and a lot of moms I've heard have baskets of fun things to do. Just anything that doesn't make your mind think, or make your mouth talk, mm-hmm. or anything like that. So that's how we manage practically habits of, okay, we're going to be patient and we're going to listen. I want, but I don't necessarily have to have your eyes. I just mm-hmm. have to have your ears.
Yes, I think that's a good rule. I often have my more movers, they're building Magna tiles or Legos really quietly. And as long as their bodies are quiet and their mouths aren't moving, it's okay. I love hearing the actual practical things, because I think you can catch a really beautiful image maybe on Instagram or Pinterest of a lovely 1 second photo of a perfect read aloud time.
Yeah, those are brutal to look at.
They're the worst. They're such a burden. I'm always trying to pull people away from Instagram and into conversation about this, because when you hear someone who creates beautiful books say, oh yeah, you could say, let's read Narnia, and someone's going to be whining and dragging their feet. Yes. There's a moment of just like, oh, right. This is done over the course of a lifetime. Not every single day is going to be a win, the dreamiest read aloud we've ever had. But I'm setting up the norm. The norm is that we read really good books. Our habits are that we are headed in this direction. And then I always think of it like the coastline. Year after year, the water slowly shapes the coastline until something 18 years later, God willing, is really beautiful and lovely within the soul of a child. Catherine, I like that you're my practical person right now, because my audience is primarily moms of really little kids. So when you were building out these habits, I think you've already touched on one great thing, which is giving the child time to prepare, not just to think you can yank them from something and be like, it's read aloud time. Let's
go.
And
then
it's going to work.
It's all about them knowing their expectations.
Right. When you were working with all little kids before you had the ice cream set where they could just go and have a bowl of ice cream, how did you help them learn to sit still, or maybe not to move their mouths so much? Do you remember your beginning tips?
I probably didn't do it very well.
Okay.
But I don't make them really sit still. I mean, I've always got a toddler like crawling over my lap or crawling over someone else, and there's constant interruption. So it's not a perfect scene whatsoever. My 9-year-old girl is very aesthetic. So she'll go into the room now. She's my oldest that I read to. She'll go into the room now and set the book up on like a table, and she'll light a smelly candle, and she'll make the pillows pretty. And then I kind of just barge in there with all the littles and we start to read. But yeah, I think they eventually will learn to stop talking if you just keep doing it, especially my 3-year-old. He's finally getting to the point where he won't interrupt every sentence, but it's just habit. It's just practice, mm-hmm. and it will never look pretty. You'll have moments of like, oh Lord, this was a good couple of minutes. You know, I'm reading, everyone's quiet, and I read something funny, and then everyone's rolling on the floor laughing. I'm like, this is the beauty part of the situation.
Yeah.
But I mean, with 9 kids, you just have to treasure those few minutes, because they don't come every day.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good encouragement. I will usually tell people that they need to have something warm when they start this sort of habit. So whether that be a cup of tea or even just a cup of hot chocolate, if kids are turning their noses up to tea. And I kind of think in the back of my head, like, am I bribing kids to listen to stories? But no, I don't think so. Now that I've heard you have ice cream and desserts are your go-to, I feel really good about my encouragement to have hot cocoa and something, even just starting with like the 5 minutes. Start with 5 minutes. Can you have your little kid sit for 5 minutes and you read a page of something, and just build up those habits and those muscles from there? Because like you guys are saying, this is done in a real family life with real other people.
Yeah. And say the category there might be hospitality. You are being hospitable to your kids, mm-hmm. and you're in doing that, you're teaching them how to be hospitable, you know?
Right.
welcoming them into that story. And that actually ties in with the whole book cover, book aesthetics. You know, you're being hospitable, but if you're putting out a beautiful looking book, you know.
Yeah. And kids are drawn to the beauty. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were created in God's image too, and they were made to appreciate beauty if we at least introduce it to them. So they are going to grab the pretty books. Right. And that's just another practical thing. Like, you have beautiful books so that your kids will pick them up and read them.
Right. That's why the art in the books is so important too, even picture books. Because think about how often you find a small child who can't read just staring at the pictures.
Yep.
Just delighting in what they see, understanding the beauty of colors and hues and put together in the story through images. Which when I know, Shay, you were talking about scripture earlier, scripture requires such imagination to read and follow. Right. It's not just didactic instruction. It's poetry and prose and history and parable and story. It requires a very healthy imagination. So I love talking about this to think about how we're preparing our children to really delight in Christ and hearing the story over and over again. So to that idea of building this family culture around reading, one thing that I hear often from commonplace listeners is that their husbands are not big readers, maybe not personally. And so it's kind of translating into a lack of interest of doing family read alouds. Do you guys have any ideas or encouragement for dads specifically, or bringing dads in to join into the literary fun?
Yeah. Let me think about that a second. I hear that sometimes as well. Is there a specific excuse that you hear from dads or from the wives of dads that the dads usually say?
Usually I hear from moms more specifically. Yeah. I would say there are two things. One is just, oh, he's just not a big reader, and he works maybe a really stressful long job, or he's gone a lot for work, and so he's just kind of tired when he gets back. That's kind of one. Yeah. The other is the constant stream of technology in the home. It's hard to pull dad away. Those are the two that I hear most frequently.
So at a very base level, it's learning to prioritize. It's catching a vision of the priority of reading stories to your kids and the importance of it. If you see it as a value, as a high value, then you're going to drop the technology. You're going to learn to become a reading person, and you're going to push through those tired nights. At the end of the day, pretty much all dads are tired, you know? All of us work for the most part. And if we're not working, say you're a stay-at-home dad, then you're probably even more tired, you know?
And so are moms.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, I mean, the mom in a typical situation, the mom has been with the kids all day. Like she's not tired, you know? I'm sure she would love to go put up her feet and take a break from the kids or from reading, you know, especially homeschool moms. So there's, you know, it's really just catching a vision for it. I think if dads could see that we as dads need to mimic God, like I was talking about earlier, in how in storytelling, in reading stories, you are speaking a new world into existence, and you're inhabiting that world with your kids. So you get to walk alongside them time after time, story after story, experiencing all the ups and downs and emotions and processing things and mysteries and adventure. And you get to do that with your kids without leaving the house, you know, and it creates such a bonding time, informative time, that it's really invaluable. I think so particularly for dads, I would say, like, if our words have the power to tear down and to build up, I think it's magnified by 100 with a father's voice. Mm-hmm. So why not use those words by telling beautiful stories, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Catherine, how about you? Coming from a woman's perspective of how maybe gently you might encourage a dad to join in the literary life.
Supporter by creation, as a helper in creation, it's hard for a woman to biblically push a husband to do something that he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
So I think that we need to go to the encouragement part. You know, listen to this podcast. This is kind of my vision for wanting the kids to learn how to read, or I read this. It's really awesome. I think you should read it too. Just helping and encouraging him to get that vision to get the desire and to be able to lead in that. Because Shay led before I did with the read alouds. I fall asleep when I read aloud.
It happens to me too late in the afternoon.
Especially, yeah, because I always have to have my caffeinated cup of tea. So when the kids are getting their fort built, I'm making tea. And then right. we meet up. Right. So they know that. And then so Shay always takes the evening ones because I'm ready to go to bed. Mm-hmm. But it has to be a partnership. And you do have to have that vision or else it won't click.
Right. I don't think much happens without an inspiring idea. And I think the difficult part that some moms, the place rather that some moms find themselves in is that they don't want to hammer their husband over the head with, this is such a good thing we need to be doing, because they know that's not going to be received well and it's not, you know, kind and loving. And so they feel like, I don't know what to do to share this vision. So I think you guys have given some really great examples there. Now I cannot let you leave without sharing some of your family's favorite stories. So if we can do from each of you, since you guys have different reading sets, what are some of your family's favorites for the top five and the bottom four?
It's probably obvious. Narnia is hugely popular. I don't even have to say that. We having different groupings of kids, you know, we're doing laps through Narnia. So I just started it over with a younger set of kids. Other than that, more recently, I guess this summer, we completed the Wingfeather Saga, which is a 4-book series. Absolutely loved that. And that's one that has kind of stuck with us and given us language to talk about some things. Like, if you're familiar, are you familiar with the story?
I know about it. We have not read it yet, but it's okay. Andrew Peterson's set, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really good. So we talk about, you know, so in that story, there's this an example of how this plays out in building your house culture. But there's the oldest sibling. The office of the oldest sibling in the royal family is the throne warden. And the job of the throne warden is to protect the king, who is the younger sibling, at all costs. So with my boys in particular, I can look at them and say, hey, you're the throne warden. Like if I'm leaving them in a situation with their younger siblings, you know?
Yeah. I like that.
So that's a recent one. And the Wilder King trilogy. Have you?
Oh, I've come across it, but I've not read that one either.
It is excellent.
Okay.
Jonathan Rogers, our 12-year-old son just ripped through that series. Super fun. Super fun read aloud to some fun voices. Those are two recent ones.
Awesome. Thank you.
So my top three right now, I guess that was a couple of years ago, but I have never forgotten The Year with Miss Agnes.
Okay.
About a school teacher and the like wilderness of Alaska, and they didn't have a teacher. So she swoops in and starts this school and provides beautiful books and maps and actually teaches the whole town sign language because there's a little deaf girl that isn't allowed to go to school up until this point. So that was a fantastic one. And we just finished the Penderwicks and the kids loved that one. And we are, today we should be finishing The Trumpet of the Swan.
Oh, lovely.
And they have really enjoyed that one. Even my toddler and my 5-year-old, they really enjoyed that one.
Oh, those are great ones. Thank you for sharing. I know that the moms are always looking for recommendations for new read alouds for everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. Here on The Way Out, I would love for you to share a little bit about where we can find more of your work. And I know, Catherine, you have a forthcoming book. So if you could tell us a little bit about what's going on at Wolfbane, where people can find you, just so they can follow you after this interview.
Awesome. Yeah. So Wolfbane Books is the name of the publishing company. And we have the Story of God series, which is biblical theology for the family. Really big, beautiful books meant to be read out loud. Compelling illustrations that can compete with a bright screen. And we have The Forgotten King, which Autumn mentioned, which is a great parable. It's beautiful, illustrated by Stephen Kratz. Story of God trilogy is illustrated by Aidan Peterson. And we have a little board book coming out that's called The King of All Things that Catherine and I did together. And it's illustrated by Breezy Brookshire, who is an amazing watercolor illustrator. And that book itself, it's a blessing over a child. It's in the form of a collect, for those of you in liturgical churches, it's just a prayer. And it is meant to be short and fun to read and beautiful to look at. It's the kind of book that you're tucking a kid in for a nap, or you're tired at the end of the day, but you want to read them a book, and you read them a quick, bouncy, rhyming book that's actually meaningful, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, we made that kind of selfishly.
Yes.
For that situation.
It's tough to find beautiful books for one-year-olds that actually have beautiful words in it.
Right. Was this one where you guys set out to write the book seeing the need, or was it something that you would kind of started doing at home and then it took the form of a book?
We set out to write the book. Well, there were actually part of the book was a prayer that I had been using when I tuck kids in.
Okay.
And so it's a little bit of both there.
Great. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me today. This was an absolute delight. Everyone else, you can find all the links, all the books mentioned in today's episode notes. I hope you will go and follow along with Wolfbane Books and bring some beautiful books in for your children, your whole family to enjoy. But I will see you guys in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Autumn.
Thank you, Autumn.